the apps. With a dedicated life coach assigned to each student and a 97% career placement rate, Maryville provides a great return on investment. Check out maryville.edu for more information.
Hey, St. Louis, Dan McLaughlin here. Big things are happening at Schnucks, especially in October. This month, you'll start to see Schnucks stores popping up all over the city. Living in St. Louis, you know Schnucks is committed to the communities they serve. Now, there will be 19 new Schnucks stores in neighborhoods all around town. You'll also notice that prices are falling, and your points will be piling up with the Schnucks Rewards app. So check out a new store near you. Come say hello. Visit Schnucks.com for the full list of new stores. See you at Schnucks.
You walk through the door and are greeted with the friendly smell of barbecue smacking you right in the face. A pleasant host seats you at a table made of wood, and a chair made of wood, on a floor made of wood. We perfectly carve a chunk of meat from a bigger chunk of meat. Pavlovian pre-sweat dots your brow and the world melts away as you drift into a meat coma. Wait, was that just Pauly Shore? Welcome to Salt and Smoke.
Hey, Tom, what's going on?
Get Memphis and get tickets, Grizz fans. Don't miss your Grizzlies as they battle the Phoenix Suns Saturday, October 27th at 7 p.m. All fans will receive a 2018 Grizzlies magnet schedule presented by Pinnacle Financial Partners. For tickets, call 901-888-HOOP or shopgrizzlies.com today.
See the USA in your Chevrolet. America's asking you to call. Drive your Chevrolet through the USA. America's the greatest land of all.
Still true. See? These lyrics are like from the 50s. Everything in it's still true. America's the greatest land of all. Best way to see it, see the USA in your Chevrolet. And of course, where are you going to buy it? From this guy. Ladies and gentlemen, the greatest Chevrolet dealer. And these are not just my words. This has been proclaimed. I'll read you the proclamation. We hereby proclaim Johnny Londoff Chevrolet of St. Louis, Missouri, has now been confirmed to be the greatest place to buy a new Chevrolet or pre-owned vehicle of any of all the dealers, and we mean all the dealers in the United States. Signed, Brett Tillman, President, Consumer Satisfaction Survey Group of America. Congratulations.
Hey.
Hey.
How you doing?
Doing great.
How you doing? We were just talking, Danny and I. We were just talking like this, you know.
But why are you doing that?
I'm just talking about the way, you know, sometimes some people start talking to you, you know.
That's right.
A lot of people look at me and they go, a lot of people that come up to me, they go, hey, a paisan. I'm like,
I'm a Macedonian. I'm not Italian.
And then one guy said to me, he goes, Macedonian, really? I don't know, you know, that's okay, though. He's from Chicago.
I'll tell you something, though, John. Macedonians can hold their own against Italians or anybody else, and I never knew that until I interviewed the great, Godfather, Marlon Brando. I interviewed him the day before he died, and he brought that up just out of nowhere. I'll play a little of the interview. I had just said, you'll hear me in the background, and he's on mic. Here's a little of that interview.
Okay, I am.
Mr. Brando, I know that, between the movies and then the myths and the stereotypes, a lot of people think of Italians as like the toughest, roughest, you know, you don't want to get into it with an Italian. Would you agree with that, Mr. Brando, having played The Godfather, that those are probably the toughest people, are the Italians?
Well, tell you something, Frank, I know it's a misconception a lot of people have, and, in my experience, I'll tell you, the Macedonians, they're tough, they got what it takes, you know. I don't care if it's in business or personal relationships, you don't mess with the Macedonians, excuse me.
That was, wow, how about that? How about that?
And he wasn't a vegan, was he?
No, he was not a vegan.
He just had gas.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, Dan, sometimes you start talking, I don't know what you're saying. You know what I mean, Dan?
I know what you're saying,
John.
That's
not too bad. That's not too bad. I don't know what character that is. That's like 100 characters you've seen over the years.
Yeah, I just watch one movie, you know, one episode of Sopranos. You know, we didn't get into Sopranos until probably the third season. Then you had to go back and watch season 1 and season 2 because immediately we were, like, hooked, right? And if you go back, I don't know the years that was playing, we used on a Sunday, we'd close the door because the boys were younger. They can't come in and listen to this.
Yeah.
You know, but now, that was one great program. I enjoyed that.
But what was different about it, I think, was, I may be wrong, but to me, that's the only time you ever got to see, like, a guy who was a real mobster at home walking around his underwear, fixing breakfast. You know, you got to see the home life and then the mob life of this guy who, except for what he did for a living, was just kind of another heavy guy lounging around the house. It was real. It seemed real.
But why are we dwelling on the heavy?
Because mobsters are generally heavy.
Huh?
Mobsters are generally heavy. Think of all the scenes where mob guys are meeting in a restaurant or something. How many little skinny stick guys do you see at that table eating spaghetti? Not too many.
They eat a lot of pasta.
And what is it? What happens to their voices? Their voices change.
What was the Boston mobster? They just caught him.
Just recently?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know that story.
Boston mobster.
I don't know. I didn't see this story.
Are you talking about the guy who's, I think his first name, or his nickname was Whitey something? Is that the one you're about?
Whitey. Oh, the great Whitey Herzog mobster.
Whitey Bulger.
Whitey Bulger.
Yeah, Whitey Bulger, that's the one.
They didn't just catch Whitey Bulger, did they? That's
in 2011, that's just last week.
7 years ago.
Yeah, seven.
Relative terms, it's, you know, just not too long ago.
Customer's always right, Frank.
Yeah. You never see a scene where there's like three mob guys, they're pretty high up in the mob, and they've got napkins tucked in their shirts, and they're eating a bunch of pasta, and not one of them talks like this. You know, yeah. Hey, Bob, could you pass me some more of the salad? No, every one of them, man, for some reason, I don't know what it is.
Hey, Vinny,
did you taste these meatballs? These are like Mama used to make. I'm not kidding. Hey, come here, Sal. Come here. Who made these meatballs? Bring that guy out here. And they always kind of get choking up while they're eating. And then the guy comes and shoots them. Yeah. Right in the back of the head while they're having lunch. Yeah. If I walk in a restaurant and I saw a bunch of mob-looking guys, I'm out. I'm going to eat somewhere else. I don't want to get in the crossfire.
Hey, that was something. Michael Corleone, he wasn't heavy, was he? I mean, think about him.
Well, John, I'm sure you can come up with two or three not-so-heavy mobsters, but there's generally an imbalance of, you know, the heavy versus the slim. The leaders are generally the heavy guys. They're the ones that have made it to the top of the family.
You get some, like, fixation on you know, heavy. On, you know, doesn't matter. Doesn't matter, Frank. Don't worry about it.
You're starting to scare me with that voice. What is that? What is the deal? You're a made man. If you're made, what did that mean? That meant like
that means that you move up in the organization.
Yeah, I think that means you get a bigger cut of the pie.
And to me, it means now you're a bigger target.
No, that's a marked man. A marked man is somebody who's...
Okay, but if you're a made man, is there always somebody wanting to take that from you and knock you down?
You're
knock
kind of
you
a
out?
Boss.
Well, yeah.
But
that's why you pay your underlings well, so then they don't turn their backs on you.
Mm.
Like
Joe Pesci in Goodfellas
was going to get made, remember?
Oh, and he ended up getting whacked.
Yeah, it was a setup.
Yeah. Boy, I love that, too. I don't know why, but you know it's coming. They take the guy, let's go for a little ride. No, we're going for a ride. And they put the back seat next to this mean looking, he knows they're going out in the middle of nowhere, and he's going to end up in the river.
You know, Godfather 1, when they take the brother-in-law, right?
Yeah.
You know, he kept hitting, you know, abusing the sister. And what was his name?
James Caan?
Sonny.
James Caan.
And they get him in the front seat. He's like, hey, you know, everything's okay. We're not going to do nothing. We got a ticket. Going to send you to Vegas. You're going to work with the other brother called man. Everything's going to be okay. All of a sudden, the guy reaches with the wire right around his neck.
Piano wire. Yeah.
Legs are kicking in the air.
But just before they kill him, they compliment him.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, you know, you're like a son to me. And I remember when you were like, 12, 13 years old, you came to me, you're like my own son.
There was a scene in The Sopranos where they took Pussy out into the ocean, and he knew he was going to kill him.
Big Pussy.
Right.
Yeah.
You got to say big. You have to say big in front pussy. Of it.
Okay, well, they called him that for short.
Okay.
Puss. Well, and they called him that for short.
And his name was Big Pussy.
They took him out on the ocean, and he knew they were going to whack him because he was an informant, and they all had a toast together.
Yeah.
Hey, one last drink before we shoot
you. Is he the one that said, just not in the face?
I think
there's
so.
Some movie where the guy goes, just not in the face.
I think so.
Yeah, it must have looked good at the casket. So what about when Michael had his brother, you know, when they're in Lake Tahoe, they're on the boat, and he, bam, bam, they kill him, and he had to kill his own brother.
I'm telling you, you gotta be careful. You gotta be so careful.
Now, you know, we're talking. I'm gonna talk about some deals here. Okay, got some deals. Here we go. Check out these. I gotta, you know, put my real Johnny Londo voice.
No, out. Use the other one because I think they'll be scared not to buy from you.
Check out all these new sign and drive program we got. That's right, sign and drive program. Don't mess with me now, Frank. I'm talking about the sign and the drive program at Johnny Londoff Chevrolet. Only 2018 cruise for just $9 a day.
Get out of here.
$9 a day?
Forget about it.
Forget about it. You can't do that. You'll be out of business. What's the matter with you?
Hey, listen. Hey. I'm telling you now something. If you listen, you learn something here, okay? 2018 Malibu, huh? I hope you're sitting down now, Frank.
Yeah.
$12 a day. Only $12 a day for a 2018 Malibu, huh?
Ooh. I'm not, what? That's
I'm
crazy.
Not kidding, no.
In
I'm
the
not
words kidding. Of Barack Obama, I'm all ears.
Yeah.
Thanks, everybody.
2018 Equinox, I'm on a roll now. 2018 Equinox, only $14 a day.
Ooh.
$9 a day for a cruise, $12 a day for a Malibu, $14 a day for an Equinox, and I'm not done. I'm not done. Don't try to push me away now. Hey, 2019 Traverse. You know, Mimi's going to beat me when I get home. She's going to punch me right in the face for like, acting like a fool. 2019. This is a 2019 Traverse. The Equinox was a 2019 Equinox, $14 a day. Traverse, $17 a day for 2019 Traverse. I got to stop. This is crazy. Giving all my money away.
Save some of it for when you get home tonight.
Yeah, you talk like that to her.
Yeah.
Hey, Mimi, give me some meatballs and a drink.
Hey, what's for dinner tonight, babe?
I'm gonna tell you, I'll take a look at that beautiful face and I'll get that look of just utter
disgust. Stuff. Yeah.
You know? And you know, just recently I've been getting that look of like really, and that's the deal. Like, you know, why? I know I just turned 60, but why grow up?
Yeah, it was too late for me.
By the way, I'll speak for the entire AM and the PM because I am AM and the PM.
Oh, yes, good to hear. We know that.
I got to tell you, we never want you to grow up, okay?
You're hilarious. I think that's possible.
We love you. You're the best. And you know what? We're open late tonight. Take advantage of why it's still light out, you know, and the sun's still up in the air. Beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. Call us 314-837-1800. 314-837-1800. 24/7, 365 at Londoff. Not Landoff, it's Londoff.com.
All
right, Macedonian.
See, now he sees what it's like for us when we can't stop. We get into one of those voices. You can't stop doing it. You can't. All right, we're going to send you more business than you can. Well, you can handle it, but we're going to send you as much as you can handle, okay?
You can handle it. Cruise, $9 a day. Malibu, $12 a day. Equinox, $14 a day. Traverse, $17 a day.
Yeah,
Silver
Rock, $20.
Goodbye.
Bye. See you. John Londoff. And now, a special segment of the Large Morning Show in the afternoon. Mike Evans has been part of this show for, and I'm close, I'm within a year here, 24 years, something like that. And some of you who are kind of new to the show don't know much of his story. Others heard it, but it's been so long that you kind of forget parts of it. I have, I know. So here to tell you, and if he wanted to, this could take 5 or 6 hours, but a 45-minute version or so, let's call it 35, of the short version of his life story, or at least the more important parts. Ladies and gentlemen from Dallas, Texas, Mike Evans.
What up?
Well,
what up?
Dr. Doug is normally on, and he can't make it today. So I thought, and we got to find a place to start. So I thought we would start with your being a tax evader who almost went to prison. I think that's a great place to start because that's how I first heard of you. I'll let you, because if I start telling it, I'll tell too much of it. But just tell the story. Let's start with you owed, you just decided, I don't think I'll pay any taxes. And after a few years, that caught up with you, and you were going to go to jail, and then you could take it from there.
Okay. Well, we're going to jump back a little bit before that. I'm from Hawaii. My dad was in the Navy for 26 years, was born and raised in Hawaii. And when I was 16, we moved to California. And my dad was transferred to Long Beach, and I quit high school and the end of my sophomore year, and went to work at a radio station, emptying trash and working the switchboard. And one of the program director would always make the record guys wait hours before he would listen to their new records and decide whether or not to put them on the radio. And the Epic record and Atlantic worked for Epic and Atlantic Records. He and I became friends. He'd bring his girlfriend in while he waited, and we got to talking. And they were trying to put together a singing act, and I had this band in high school before I quit. I said, look, I'll use the switchboard here to call high schools here in L.A., and I'll see about booking for $125. My band will take $75, and you and your girlfriend can take $50, and we'll do halftime, like a 30-minute show between halves and at basketball games at high schools. And like saw a little show. Well, we started doing that, and it was so popular. We probably did 25 or 30 of those, and I ended up spending a lot of time at their house and hanging out with them. It was Caesar and Cleo, but while we were doing it, they decided to use the real name Sonny and Cher.
Ooh!
Yeah. So
you launched their career.
All of a sudden, I'm hanging out, staying with Sonny and Cher.
Now, before we forget it, let's not forget to include that on the recording, the hit record. I Got You, Babe. Folks, playing tambourine on that record, Mike Evans.
Mm-hmm. Mike Evans.
Yeah.
One of the sessions while we were recording it, Phil Spector was in another part of Gold Star Recording Studios recording the Shirelles and was firing guns.
Yeah, well, he was crazy.
That was the same studio, Gold Star Recording Studio on Santa Monica Boulevard. Anyway.
He went to jail, right?
Yeah, he's in jail right now. Yeah,
where he's changed his name to Phil My Sphincter.
Yeah.
I like it.
Okay, so after that, let's go to, I want to ultimately, before too long, get to 1994, I guess it was.
Boy, that's really moving up here. The years I spent traveling with the Dodgers.
I know, but if we try to cram a five-hour story
K-Rock,
in, we're not getting...
All my mornings at K-Rock.
I know, but this...
But the New York Post.
Okay, but this audience wants to start with how you became part of this show.
Well, there was a few years where I just didn't pay taxes. I was playing fast and loose, and I was working for the Post and doing some other stuff, and I didn't pay taxes. And my accountant, who's still my accountant in Hawaii, said it's been 2 years, 3 years actually, and they're going to make an example out of you. And I had to come up with about $60,000 immediately.
And this is several years ago, so today's money...
This is in 1993.
Yeah, so today's money, 150 grand, 200 grand.
Yeah. So I'm panicking. I had left a station in San Diego, and I thought, well, I better just get back to work. I took about 6 or 7 months off, and I had the idea of doing what I do on your show and syndicating other shows, doing Hollywood features. But 2 weeks into me calling people that I knew on radio that did morning shows and pitching them the idea of letting me come on their show for a few minutes every morning doing Hollywood, O.J. Simpson killed Ron and Nicole.
No, he didn't. You watched the trial? Yeah. You were there, for goodness sakes. He killed him. Not good.
And I had a courtroom pass, so I'm inside the courtroom every day. So all of a sudden, I had more stations that I knew what to do with. I mean, because everybody wanted to have somebody who was in the courtroom. During my years in Los Angeles, I had secured a L.A. Superior Courtroom Pass, LAPD credential, and you know, so I had all of that. So I got enough money in advance to pay off my taxes, so I didn't go to jail, which was good.
O.J. Simpson, it actually can be said, kept you out of prison.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Wow.
No, it wasn't for O.J. In fact, really good friends of mine, really, for a while there, before he ended up getting in trouble again, I would actually send him a card when I had an address on him, thanking him.
Now, you're leaving part of this out, though, because you had to hustle this work up. But the phone, your phone just didn't start ringing because there are people who didn't know you existed. You solicited. You went out and said, hey, hire me. I'm your guy. I'll be in the courtroom. And the reason I know this is because at the time, I think it was on Market Street. We were working over there, and you had presented this idea to the station, and they said, no, we don't need that. And I said, well, I do, so I'll just hire him. And the station passed on it. Like typical of radio program director idiots, they couldn't see the value in having somebody in the courtroom and not just take a feed from some network news or what happened today in the OJ trial. So that was a good decision. I'm gonna, and I will take credit for that on my part, because it turned into a lot more than just OJ. Because once the OJ trial was over, we just kept going. There's plenty of other things to talk about.
Exactly, and we were covering OJ. I mean, it wasn't just what was going on in the courtroom. It was like, you know, Marcia Clark playing pool and telling OJ jokes at McGilligan's in Long Beach late night between courtroom hearings.
All right, you want to know what I remember that you told us that I never heard on any network newscast, and I don't know why this is the one that sticks with me. Because of you, I know what kind of perfume Marcia Clark wears. Now, I don't know why, but the day you did that, you said, well, I was on the elevator with Marcia Clark. Well, what kind of perfume she wears? And I said, what? You said Obsession. Mm-hmm. Because you asked her.
I did.
You're not going to get that just
it's
anywhere,
funny,
folks.
You would remember that.
I know.
Maybe you would remember some of my other Hollywood stories, like Scarlett Johansson bleaching her butt hair. I mean, I think that was pretty
I wiped funny. That out of my mind.
Okay, yeah, good.
I blocked that out. So then the trial is over, and as we all know, not guilty, and we just continue to do our thing. Now, the other thing I want people to know, and I wanted to tell them this story, is you, both of your parents, separately, if I remember right, committed suicide, correct?
Right.
Your biological father and mother both committed suicide.
My mother left me when I was under a year old. I don't remember her at all. And we just found out, maybe 6 or 7, 8 years ago. I was just always told that she had died, and nobody knew anything else about it. We just finally found out how she died. She committed suicide in Washington, D.C., and when I found out, she had a brother that is still alive. He's 94 years old. Went to her gravesite, and she killed herself in Washington, D.C., went to the building out of the newspaper article where she was found. So that she committed suicide in 1952 or 53, and then my dad had me as long as he could in Hawaii, and then he married a Canadian tourist when I was 13, and they had two kids, a sister who lives in Leavenworth, Kansas, and then my Brister, who lives in Long Beach.
Now, we have to explain. You call it Brister because this was your brother, but now he's your sister. Long before Caitlyn Jenner, ladies and gentlemen, long before the transgender stuff, Mike Evans had a brother who became his sister. Now, as your brother, his name was like Jerry or something?
Harry.
I'm sorry?
Harry.
Harry. And as your sister, he's Sherry.
Sherry.
Yeah. This is weird, and I can't imagine the first time you're either visited by or you go to visit your brother, but, ooh, you got to remember not to call him a he, but to call her your sister. That just, that takes
and
some
I
getting
do,
used
I
to.
I do. I've accepted it. I mean, that is what it is, and she's Sherry, and I love her, and there you go, and there you be.
But it gets more complicated because your brother, who's now your sister, decides to get married. Tell him about this.
Sherry married Donna, who was a guy named Don.
Folks, this will give you a headache. This starts to get real tough to follow here.
You almost need a program, but you know what? I mean, they're very nice people.
No, I didn't say they weren't nice. I'm just saying this is kind of hard to follow. This is like the song "I'm My Own Grandpa" that we played. So your Donna is your sister-in-law, but would have been your brother-in-law if he hadn't turned into a woman. Now, of the two, your brother, who's now your sister, and is it his husband or his wife? How do they refer to themselves?
I think Sherry is the wife.
So your brother is the wife.
They got married. We went to their wedding ceremony, and they were married in matching wedding gowns.
Okay. Now, did either one of them get rid of their junk, or do they both have the bone?
I don't know. I never asked.
See, I would think that might be something that he would or she would share with you, but okay, you don't know.
I don't know.
Now, you did say years ago something funny about they came to visit you, and it was something about it was just an odd sight to see your sister shaving or something. There were hairs in the bathroom or something. It's just something odd or weird. I don't remember exactly what it was. But now we have to go from that to you and your buddy that you had a band with masquerading as... Hey, Limey, pull up this song. What's the name of that song that was the hit that you guys could play?
Over the Mountain, Across the Sea.
All right, Limey, see if you can find Over the Mountain, Across the Sea.
Johnny and Joe.
By Johnny and Joe. When you find it, you got it?
Yep.
All right, now, folks, I want you to listen to a little of this song because there's a great story that goes with this song. Here's a little bit of... And then, by the way, this was a big hit. This was a hit. Here, play it. Here we go.
There's a girl... waiting for me.
Now it sounds a lot like many songs from the 50s. It had that sound. So you and your buddy, you had a band, correct?
Yeah, we had the same band that backed Sonny and Cher in the early days when I was 16.
Okay, and you discovered that you guys could sound just like this record. When you sang it, you could sound just like Johnny and Joe.
Well, yeah, now I'm a staunch, I don't want to say anything about it. I was very against the Vietnam War. I had very long hair. I was openly protesting against the war, and I decided that I was just going to disappear, and he needed to disappear. So I was booking acts like the Moody Blues and other bands. So and I was had worked in radio at the radio station. So I knew my way around. So I would call cities outside major markets. I would call Pocatello, Idaho, Des Moines, Iowa, Edmonton, Alberta, Canada, Albuquerque, New Mexico, El Paso. I'd call secondary markets, and I would call nightclubs, and I would say, hey, this is Mike Evans, Hollywood artist, and Johnny and Joe from Over the Mountain Across the Sea, they have relatives there in Pocatello. Yes, you're in Pocatello. And they're available just next week for only $200. They'll come to your club. They'll teach your house band their song, and they'll do two 20-minute sets.
So you're calling as, like, their agent.
Yeah, Mike Evans.
I
did it so cheap, and this is before internet or any of this stuff, so they didn't know anything about it except they knew the song. Knew the song. But one of my favorite stories is we were in Durango, Colorado, and I would also call the hotel that we were going to, and I would say, you know, this is Mike Evans. Johnny and Joe are going to come there. They're going to do some interviews at the local radio station, and I would already set that up on a morning show. And they're going to be there two nights. They'll plug your hotel on the radio if you'll comp them the room. So that way we didn't have to, you know, we just barely made enough money to take a bus to the next city.
So you're getting.
I didn't mention the FBI was chasing us at the time, but that's another story.
You're getting a comped hotel room from a hotel because they know you're going to plug them as, were you Johnny or Joe?
I was Joe.
Okay, that you and your buddy Johnny, who had this hit record, They're going to get the opportunity of a lifetime because you have a layover or you're visiting, you're between gigs.
We'll give them comps to the show.
Yeah.
But my favorite story about that is we were in Durango, Colorado, and we were doing a morning show. And there was no, like you said, there was no internet, there was no faxes, there was none of that stuff. And we're doing the interview, and the disc jockey says, I had a hard time finding your song, but I found it on an old Art LeBeau album. And he says, I'm gonna play it. So he played it, and I looked at the album. And when we got back to the hotel, I stole the album cover. And John, and I were in the hotel. I go, you're not going to believe this. And I showed him the cover.
Don't give it away yet. Don't give it away yet. Because no. I think we're not there yet. I think you still have to make it clear to people. How long, this is fraud. Okay. How long did you and your buddy travel and play as people you weren't? You were pretending to be. How long did you do that?
A little under 2 years.
Okay, so for almost 2 years, you traveled to these little Springfield, Illinois-type places, so far from L.A. or New York, that he was ever going to know, because Johnny and Joe, as far as I know, never had another hit. You didn't see them on American Bandstand. They weren't in it. So nobody really knew what they looked like, because this is an important part of the story. You didn't even know for a long time.
No, I had no idea.
What they looked like.
And I tell you, I would book the Platters and the Dominoes and the Rivingtons and these other bands when I was back in L.A. When I was 18 years old, I was booking this along with the Moody Blues, and that was one oldie group that I sometimes wanted to package with the Rivingtons and Dick and Dee Dee, but I could never find them. So I didn't know, and I knew that when I decided to do this thing, and there was a reason that I went on the road and went in hiding for a couple of years. But can I tell the story about Durango now?
Yes. Now you get to the part where after almost two years of impersonating these people, go ahead.
I get back to the hotel. And I stole the record cover of the album cover. And John are in this cheap motel we stayed. And I said, you're not going to freaking believe this. And I showed him the album cover. And he said, oh, my God, there's Johnny Joe. We're black. And you're a woman.
There was a black guy and a girl named Johnny and Joe. And you had no idea.
Well, that's probably why in Reno, Nevada, you know, a bunch of black guys, you know, followed us out of the club one night, beat the hell out of us. So
they did.
Oh yeah.
Didn't you get busted while you were actually in a radio station doing an interview?
No, on stage.
Oh my goodness!
The guy says, "This is definitely the unoriginal Johnny and Joe." Boom! Over the mountain.
Oh my!
We came out and sang like there was nothing wrong.
Holy cow! And nobody ever caught you. Nobody ever charged you with anything. You never really heard from the real Johnny and Joe, who they don't to this day know you did it. Probably.
Well, they've got to be long dead. I mean, yeah. You know, they've got to be long, long dead by now.
Well,
I mean, this happened in 1967. So 67, 77, 87,
okay.
97.
All right. Now,
it's 51 years ago.
All right. Now, for those who don't know, let's jump to, and this is sort of very
somebody
much,
needs to write a book about
this is very much like the Frank Abagnale Catch Me If You Can thing. You posed for a couple of years as a flight attendant. You had no training. And you managed to get a uniform and ride in the jump seat all over the place for free as a fake flight attendant, right?
I might have done that.
Now, how did that happen? How did that end up? How do you fall into something like that? And tell us that story.
I had a lot of my friends, or a couple of my really good friends, were flight attendants, you know, and it started off with, hey, let's, you know, we're going to Hawaii next week. They go, you got to go with us. You know, Hawaii. You're from Hawaii. I go, I can't afford to go to Hawaii. He goes, put on one of my uniform. I'll give you my uniform, and you know, we'll make up an idea and just get on the plane with us and go in jump seat.
Because it's not uncommon at all, that seat for that seat to be available, and as a courtesy to people in the business, they let, yeah, flight attendant fly to Hawaii in an extra jump seat.
And again, that's what, now, over 50 years ago.
Now, how did you get the uniform and realistic-looking credentials, because they wear that badge thing? How did you get that?
I just wore his one of my buddy's uniforms that fit me.
Yeah. What'd you do about the credentials?
One of the flight attendants that weren't working, I would just use his ID, throw on his ID. The pictures were close enough. I mean, nobody looked.
Well, long hair. I could see where it'd be a lot easier to look like somebody else. Now, when you were flying on these trips, did they ever call you into service and go, "I'm so glad you're on board. We're short of flight attendants."
A couple of times they had flight attendants that, would get sick or something, and they'd have to serve meals and stuff.
Well, how do you know how to do that? I mean, how do you know where anything is? Like, where's the warm-up thing and the coffee maker? I mean, how do you do that?
Well, I didn't have galley duty, so I would just take the trays out, pick them up, get their beverage.
And your buddy, was your buddy always on the flight with you?
No.
Oh.
So you're just hanging out there on your own. Did you ever get busted in flight?
No.
But didn't they ever say something like, "Hey, man, you act like you've never even done this before"?
No.
What, did you do the buckle your seatbelt, and in the event of drop in pressure, did you have to get up and make that speech?
Never had to make the announcement.
Yeah, thank goodness. Yeah, they might have caught you for sure there. But you served the food and coffee and
whatever?
Sure. Unbelievable. Well, so brother, who's now your sister, who married?
But now you also got to remember this. I mean, this is all so back in history. You got to remember. Since then, I've been to inauguration parties with Barack Obama as a credential member of the media inside OJ's trial. Donald Trump inauguration, George Bush inauguration. Was at many Academy Awards, 18 Super Bowls, World Series, heavyweight championship fights, met everybody from Neil Armstrong to Muhammad Ali, covered Billy Graham's crusades for television, interviewed Ellison Onizuka just before he died on the Challenger. I mean, we're going back to that, the really, really old stuff, but in the last 40 years, I've done some pretty incredible stuff as a legitimate member of the media.
Well, I didn't believe you about the Muhammad Ali thing, and so I called him, and I just, mm-hmm. I interviewed him, I just said, no, I said, hey, man, I said, this guy Mike Evans claims that he's met all these people and done all this stuff. I said, do you even remember a guy like that? And I'll play you a little bit of what Muhammad Ali said. Here it is.
Well, Mike Evans, he's the greatest. He's the greatest of all time. I'm the greatest. I might be the greatest in the ring. He's the greatest out of the ring. I hope one son to listen to Joe Frazier. Help us with that. Mike Evans, he whoop everybody when it comes to media.
Wow, there it is right there. There's your proof.
There you go.
There's your proof right there.
But you know what's really strange, and really everybody I know that has known me for a long time says you've got to write a book, because there's so much traveling with the Dodgers. I mean, the stories covering Major League Baseball and having dinner with Ted Williams. I mean, some of the stuff I've done, to me, it just seems normal. It's like normal stuff for like Sherry, and because that's just my life. But apparently, and I guess it's proof positive by you calling me today, I guess
Mike, this is not most.
Life.
No, this is not an average life. Most of us did not fake being a flight attendant. Most of us don't have a brother that's now our sister. Most of us didn't masquerade for a couple of years as a recording artist that we're really not. Most of us did not almost go to jail because we didn't pay our taxes, but OJ saved us from jail. No, that's not most of us. And I know that over the years, a couple of movie studios or directors or whatever have flirted with the idea of making this into a movie. Tell you something. I don't see a whole lot of difference between this and the Frank Abagnale story. Catch me if you can. In fact, this has some aspects of it that are even better. I don't know whether or not. I think it would all depend on how it was written, how it was directed, who was cast. All of that would come into play. But there's certainly a story. Look, we've all seen movies where there wasn't near the plot line or story that you have here. I mean, not
I
even
think,
close.
I would think at least a book on my whole life. I mean, the movie part, we had a couple of options from MGM and one from Universal for just the Johnny and Joe's part. Just the Johnny and Joe part. I mean, without all the other stuff.
Well, people are fascinated by things like this, and I would agree. A book, and you could call it something like, you know, From Imposter to Impossible, meaning...
Or Mike Evans, In My Shoes.
No, see, that's a horrible name.
See, that's horrible. That makes me want
to
stink.
That's horrible. but Imposter to Impossible, meaning from pretending to be somebody he's not to accomplishing the impossible, drop out of high school and still able to have come out unscathed, basically, and didn't go to jail and didn't take another wrong turn, turn his life around and met his wife. Yeah, and if you use Imposter to Impossible, you owe me money. I'll take a piece for that. But
and you know what? And I have four kids. My son is not my. I adopted my wife's daughter, and I have two biological daughters, and all four of my kids are great kids, college graduates, great jobs. I mean, they're like Frank's kids, just really strong, wonderful human beings, which is amazing. Having you know, been the fruit of my loins.
Yeah, but it's really not, because it's not like you did anything that horrible. You know, they're not the kids of a murderer. They're not the kids of a child molester. They're not the kids of somebody who did rotten things to people. You just, all you really did was survive. You did what you had to do to survive.
You know, the...
Bernie Madoff ruined people's lives. You didn't ruin anybody's life.
Well, no. Everything I did, including them actually having parades for Johnny and Joe in Seattle, our third time there. We went there three times at the same club, and they had this little mini parade for us down this main street where the club was.
So you're in a parade,
we're on
waving,
the back of a limousine, waving to people. I mean, we brought a lot of joy to people's life. We didn't bring any sadness to people.
No, and granted, a lot of what you did was illegal, but you didn't hurt anybody, and it's a great story. I just. Yeah, I know you've come close to having it, the screenplay written. There's been a treatment done, but nobody's really picked it up and has run with it. And maybe it's not, maybe a movie's not there, but certainly a book is there. My goodness, books are published every day that are just crap. And this is, has the makings of a really interesting book. Well, I wanted, the people who, you know, didn't know your story, because there are a lot of people, who's Bernice, or who was Reggie, and you know, a lot of time has gone by, and they didn't get to hear the story, and now they have, and thank goodness for podcasts, because people who didn't get to hear this today can hear it tonight, or can hear it tomorrow, or can hear it the next day, so there'll be a lot of people who will hear it. If you want, we've done it before, you want to give your email address out? If anybody just has a question, or maybe there's a book publisher out there and they want to talk to you, can we give your email address out? You don't mind. You've given it before.
No, I'm pretty easy to find. You just write Evans Radio on Google, and there I am. Evans Radio at AOL. Simple as that.
He's one of the three people that still has an AOL
address. I am. And my kids and everybody are going, what do you have this AOL? What is? And I was like, I don't know.
Evans Radio at AOL.com. And you do now live in Dallas, Texas. After how long were you out in California, Southern California?
I did 20 years in Hawaii, and off and on, including my childhood, and 50 years in Los Angeles and Palm Springs, and 6 months in Dallas.
Right. Well, I got to tell you something.
I'm in Dallas because I want to be close to my grandkids.
Yeah, that's what happens to you when you get old. You really do realize in the last years that's so much more important than you ever thought it would be.
Absolutely.
All right. Listen, you got a great story, and a lot of people might think, well, he's got to be exhausted after doing 40 minutes or so. I bet he can't do his segment. No, he's going to do his segment in about another. Less than an hour, you'll be back. So we'll catch up with you. What, Limey?
Listeners just texted over a question asking, Mike, if there was a movie made about you, who would you want to play you in the movie?
Oh, I know who they'll say. Brad Pitt, probably.
You know what? He almost did play me in Johnny and Joe many years ago when he first started, and I think he would be great as me. And I don't really even like him. One time somebody, Mark Wahlberg.
Mark Wahlberg. There you go.
When he was Marky Mark and just getting started, he actually, his agent, we had a meeting, and he came very close to playing me in the Johnny and Joe story.
Now, the other guy you've always liked, I think you wouldn't mind if he played, was Zac Efron.
Yeah, and there's another guy that we also talked to when Universal had an option on it, and he came
Steve
out
Buscemi.
Of Disney.
Roman Polanski. Oh, see, that's real nice. Dan says Steve Buscemi.
That's just mean.
Real nice, Dan.
That's nice.
Everything was going nice, so Dan. Well. I was going to say Roman Polanski, but Steve Buscemi trumps Roman Polanski.
The conversation is over. Aloha and hooey.
Yeah, we'll talk to you in less than an hour, okay? All right, goodbye. How about that story? I mean, come on. Most of us don't have one of those
He's
stories.
He's got an interesting life, that's for certain.
I mean, your parents committed suicide, totally separated, one having nothing to do with the other. The suicides were not related or over any of the same psychological issues. Then the brother thing, that alone. You know, like my brother's gay, okay, but if my brother had become my sister, and then he introduces me to his wife or husband, I'm confused. That right there, most of us don't even have that story. And then you meet up with this couple, Cleo and whatever their names were, Napoleon and Cleo or something, and you become friends. You go out on the road together and do these gigs. You take most of the money. They take a little less. They become Sonny and Cher. You become a guy who goes out and impersonates other people and almost goes to jail. Wow. So there's the Mike Evans story. And I almost said if you missed it, you can get the podcast. Well, if you missed it, you can't hear me now because you're not listening anyway. But that's the beauty of the podcast. And for those of you, even though you are listening, if you're not using the app, the 590 app, what's the matter with you?
I mean, idiot!
Yeah, I mean, look, even if you pick up the signal clearly, use the app anyway. If you decide to jump in the car and, you know, head for Fort Smith, Arkansas, you're not going to lose. It's crystal clear anywhere in the world. I'm his dad listening right now. Hello, Dave. How are you? He's in Birmingham, England listening. It is the way to listen to now any radio station. And then, of course, in the upper left-hand corner, there's little lines up there. Touch that, and it'll take you right to the podcast. You just hit the show that you want, and you can hear any show that you might have missed. I'm getting some texts here. Nah, they're kind of irrelevant and have little to do with what we just talked about. I have to do. I don't have any business to do. You want to take care of yours, Limey?
No, would you mind taking it up to the top of the hour? I've already moved all the spots into.
Oh,
the next,
I'll be happy to do that.
Thank you very much.
That'll give me time to remind everybody that the guy called a little earlier. His wife's name is Barry. Oddly enough, I remember her name, and I can't remember his. They're going on the Rhine River cruise with us. It's June 26th. Listen, time goes so fast. I know this is October. And you go, well, that's not till June 26th. Believe me, it'll be here before you know it. And then there will be some of you who are going to be mad. We should have jumped on that. I wish we jumped on. Jump on it now. I think we have 4 cabins left or something on this spectacular river cruise aboard the 5-star Amadeus Silver II. We leave Amsterdam, and I'm not going to give you the whole rundown. Julie, our travel agent, can do that. But if you go to facebook.com/AM and the PM, Dan has put all this Rhine River Cruise info on there. Folks, don't feel, as they used to say, don't feel like the Lone Ranger. If you go, I don't know anything about Europe. I've never been to Europe. I'm not a world traveler. I'm lucky to have been to the Caribbean, Mexico, Dominican, Jamaica. But I've never been to Europe. I'm not a seasoned veteran traveler when it comes to this stuff. My wife has been. She was a travel agent for 16 years. It doesn't matter. You're going to be with a great bunch of AM and the PM people. And we're limited on this trip to fewer people than we can normally take. And when I say we only have about 4 or 5 cabins left, that's what we have left. They will be gone. If you can swing it, and here's the important part, $4,500 per person, but we skipped a year. See, we didn't take a trip. in all of 2018. So I had told you, double up on your money, and for about twice what we normally spend, you can go on this spectacular Rhine River cruise. That music that we normally have that tells me it's coming up on 5 o'clock, I didn't hear that music, so I look up and I see it's already, there it is, 45 seconds late. Check it out. Go online. You don't have to have a Facebook page either. Just Facebook.com/AM and the PM, Rhine River Cruise. The few cabins that are left will go before you know it. Don't go anywhere because the Playhouse is coming up. And you know what time it is. It's 5 o'clock at 590 The Fan.
This is TJ Moe. You're listening to 590 The Fan, KFNS, Wood River, and 590TheFan.com St. Louis, the home of Budweiser.
NBC News Radio, I'm Dean Muccio. President Trump says federal investigators will find out who mailed suspected homemade bombs to the Obamas, Clintons, and CNN, among others. Speaking